from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in the opening hour this morning, UC Berkeley Chancellor Nicholas Dirks announced his resignation Tuesday as critics faulted him for his handling of the university's $150 million budget deficit and a string of sexual harassment cases involving faculty that many felt were poorly handled. Most recently, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that the campus paid more than $200,000 to improve Dirks' strategic profile. Dirks, a noted historian and author, will join the UC Berkeley faculty full-time once a successor is appointed, and his resignation will take effect after the school year. And we'll discuss Dirks' tenure, the recent resignation of UC Davis Chancellor Linda Katehi, and what lies ahead for UC after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Tuesday, Nicholas Dirks, UC Berkeley's 10th chancellor, announced his resignation over ongoing criticism for poor handling of sexual misconduct cases, a $150 million budget deficit, and a number of other issues, including the hiring of so-called image boosters to the cost of some $200,000. Dirks will return to teaching and research, and in this opening Forum segment, we want to discuss his resignation and what lies ahead for the university, and we'll talk about the ongoing financial and management challenges large public universities face in an era of declining government funding. Joining us from Sacramento is Anna Tentakulis, education reporter for KQED News, and welcome, Anna.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello to you. Glad to have you aboard here, and also glad to have Katie Murphy, who's with us from Oakland this morning, higher education reporter for the Mercury News and East Bay Times. Welcome, Katie Murphy.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And we'll also say good morning to Bob Jacobson, who joins us from Berkeley. He's Dean of Undergraduate Studies at UC Berkeley, also former chair of the UC Berkeley Academic Senate. Welcome, Bob Jacobson.
Good morning, and thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And let me begin with Anna Tentakulis. And Anna, we could maybe get you to lay some of this out for us. I mentioned some of the big issues here, but there was a no-confidence concern, a possibility of a no-confidence vote back in May. And one was in the works, wasn't it? Another one?
Yes, there was. There was another campaign to, you know, get faculty behind this idea of voting no confidence in the chancellor. And so I think all of this kind of just spells out this idea that he was just not the one that the university really wanted to get behind. He was often described as being aloof and disconnected, and I think these series of missteps really underscored that for many people on campus.
He was also under investigation for alleged misuse of public funds. This had to do with a personal use he and his wife had of a personal trainer without payment.
That's right. These revelations recently surfaced that he was essentially using a personal trainer on the university's dime while he was traveling. That and also news that he built a $700,000 kind of perimeter fence around his residence and a $9,000 escape hatch from his office. I mean, all these things pointed to this idea that he just didn't get the people, the university. He wasn't in the mix. I think also he was just not a very charismatic leader. He's much more academic. So he didn't really thrill a crowd. And I think, you know, just that persona also did not help with all these other problems.
Well, the resignation, we should mention, does not take effect until the end of the year. But let me bring Dean Bob Jacobson into this, who, again, is Dean of Undergraduate Studies at UC Berkeley. He wanted to kind of overlap academic departments. And from at least what I've been reading, Bob, the faculty were mad at him because they didn't feel consulted.
I think that, you know, Berkeley has a lot of things that it's working through right now, partly because of the budget deficit, partly because of decreasing funding, partly because we're trying to take more students and do more research. There's just a lot of stress on that organization. And working through it was hard. There were a lot of different points of view in an organization this complicated. Some of them felt not consulted. Some of them felt that where the decisions were being made, they were too soon or too late or lots of other things. And the combination of that and some of the missteps that you've been talking about ended up sapping a lot of the support for what is a very, very difficult negotiation across this big campus.
Well, I want to talk about as much of those issues as we can cover, but let me get to the faculty support question with you in a little more detail, because there was a petition that was signed by over 45 rather distinguished members of the faculty, and yet Judith Butler, who is one of the more distinguished members of the faculty, said it's just a small group working in the summer and they really don't represent the faculty. So, I mean, can we speak broadly about the support the chancellor had from the faculty or the antipathy against him from the faculty?
I think it's fair to say that there were people who were very strongly in support, and there were people who were very much not in support, and that went back and forth. There was a meeting in May, which I think you've already mentioned, where the chancellor came out and admitted some mistakes, talked about how to move forward, and that changed the discussion for a little while. But, you know, time goes on, and more decisions are made, and people are forming their opinions. And as I think it was mentioned earlier, it was very difficult for him to get out in front of this entire faculty and engage with all of it.
But he did get out. Let me go to Katie Murphy on this. I think, Katie, the way you reported it, he made a what I suppose you characterize and many have characterized as a graceful exit, particularly in comparison to UC Davis's chancellor.
That's right. I mean, a week before, the Davis chancellor resigned, but that was after a very public battle with UC President Janet Napolitano. By contrast, we don't know if the president's office also was pushing for Dirks to resign or not, but she didn't stand in his way and released a statement thanking him for his service and appreciating his 3 years at Berkeley.
But let's talk about what particularly surfaced after a report on this in the San Francisco Chronicle, having to do with hiring essentially, well, there was concern, of course, about spending excess as well by Chancellor Katehi, as well as Chancellor Dirks, and we'll bring this into greater focus when we talk about public universities in general and how they spend their money. But he hired, a former, Hillary Clinton staffer and a group called Williams Worth out of Seattle to essentially build up his image. And we're talking about $15,000 a month and maybe half of that in subcontractors, just all about branding.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the Chronicle reported that the campus spent over $200,000 in these contracts to elevate the chancellor's image, which goes to the same points that Anna was raising earlier, the perception that he was out of touch with the sense of what was happening on the campus. And this is all happening at the time when departments were being asked to make these painful cuts. But I believe that the contracts, they would argue that they were made partly to elevate the university's brand and bring more philanthropy in, which was a key, which was really necessary part of addressing this $150 million budget deficit. But it also just doesn't look good. And for it to come out at this time after all of these other problems that were ranging from the symbolic to the very serious over the past year, I think it was just too much for him to overcome.
Well, he also had a fence built around his house, which certainly carries a lot of symbolism to it, and around the chancellor's digs, which, of course, were rent-free and of no cost. But a lot of that budget that was just referred to, Anna Tentakulis, let me go back to you on this, a lot of it was construction debt that came from predecessors of Nicholas Dirks.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of that he inherited. And so you just can't do a lot about that other than to try to raise money. And that's something that he pointed to, is that in the past 2 years, there has been record years of fundraising. And I think this points to this whole issue of the job of a chancellor. It's very difficult. You have many people to answer to: the UC president, regents, faculty union, students, the public opinion, campus community. It's a very difficult job. And I think that also kind of goes back to this idea of him trying to elevate his own brand. I mean, my sense is that he really wanted to be kind of this key thought leader. You know, when you looked at UC Berkeley, of course you thought of the university, but you saw, you know, Dirks as being this kind of this brain guiding the university and really shaping higher education. And so I think perhaps to his fault, he concentrated too much on that and didn't do enough to kind of look at, you know, in terms of like the sexual harassment and assault cases on campus, doing more to really get at that problem and assure the campus community that he was doing something about it.
Well, let's talk about you mentioned record levels of philanthropy. Let's talk about some of the things that he did accomplish, because he did manage and we talked about it with him on the air. In fact, the new global initiative for research, he increased diversity. In his resignation speech, he said that he had improved undergraduate education. We'll talk with Bob Jacobson about that, but also pointed out that he actually improved sex misconduct policies.
Well, you know, I think this all kind of fell on his lap, and, you know, it began with the sexual assault cases on campus among students. And, you know, to his credit, he did improve procedures for handling that. But, you know, all UCs are having to do that. All universities are having to do that. I think it really came down to the sexual harassment, you know, these high-profile star faculty members sexually harassing colleagues and students and kind of giving them a slap on the hand about that. And I think that really, you know, that's when I think a lot of faculty and students lost confidence in him. Again, he said that he improved procedures around that, but it came too little too late.
Of course, there was also student concern. Let me go to you on this, Katie Murphy, about the fact that there was essentially an emergency exit that was built for thousands of dollars, I guess around $9,000, to avoid protesters. And the argument was he should have engaged more with them. He should not have avoided them.
Yeah, I think that this escape hatch was built, I think it was over the summer, for $9,000. And again, just like the fence, it just the symbolism shows that or suggests that he wasn't willing to engage, or even suggests a fear of what might happen during protests. I mean, UC Berkeley is known for its protests, and I remember when in the news conference when Dirks was first named back in 2012. People asked him, "Are you prepared for this? You know, you're coming from a private Ivy League institution. Are you prepared for what might be thrown at you?" And he said he would be, but this calls into question whether he was and his comfort level with engaging with people.
And let me go back to Bob Jacobson. I had mentioned undergraduate education, and the chancellor certainly took credit for improving undergraduate education, but how do you see it, Bob Jacobson?
I think he did make a difference in undergraduate education on a number of different levels. We're taking more students this fall, and you know, for the state of California, that's important. And we're managing to do it with his support, not by cannibalizing. He, even though it's a time of deficit, he found money for additional teaching in this area. He managed to get people together to prioritize these things. In many ways, undergraduate education is getting a lot more attention now than it has over the first half of the 20 years I was here. So I think that these are some of the good legacies he's going to leave behind. Without arguing any of the other points that have been made, I think that you know, part of what he's done by stepping aside is to make it possible to get out of the way and move on with the rest of these things for the institution.
Well, you were you are a former chair of the UC Berkeley Academic Senate. There was certainly a number of faculty who said that the whole relationship with the Academic Senate had deteriorated under Chancellor Birx. Is that a fair characterization?
So the faculty here is big enough that there's always a huge range of opinion, and the Academic Senate is the place where that gets all thrashed out. And I think it is fair to say that things get very strained whenever it's a time of difficulty for the university. Shared governance means making tough choices. But I'm not so sure that that's entirely due to the way Chancellor Dirks works. I think that's part of the nature of the faculty here. We're a lot of people that have a lot of different opinions. That's partly why the place is great. And so, you know, we want to continue that. We want this place to continue to do these kinds of things. We've got 28,000 students going to class next Wednesday. But we also have to move forward. We have to find a way to govern with the next chancellor.
Well, let me open the phone lines and bring our listeners into this discussion. We have Bob Jacobson, Dean of Undergraduate Studies, with us by phone, and also Anna Tentakulis, who is education reporter for KQED News, and Katie Murphy, who is higher education reporter for the Mercury News and East Bay Times. And I want to hear from you and your reactions to the chancellor's resignation. And we will, I believe, talk with many of you about what your expectations are for leadership at the UC Berkeley campus and the UCs in general, and about some of the concerns about moving forward, not only in the UC Berkeley campus, but on UC campuses in general. Let me invite you to join us now. Our toll-free number is available to you, and that number is 866-733-6786. Feel free to join the program. Again, you can do that by calling us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can join the program by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and please feel free again to join the program. When you're talking about mixed faculty responses, Bob Jacobson, I know it's hard to generalize about faculty on a campus as diverse as UC Berkeley, or for that matter, any of the UCs or the CSUs and so forth. But we're going to talk more, I hope, about the kind of special perks that many chancellors have been availing themselves of. And I would think that this doesn't necessarily go down well for the most part with faculty in general.
I think there's a distinction between perks and what you need to get the job done. I mean, part of the job of being the chancellor of an organization this big is to be a leader. And for the number one public institution in the world, you expect them to be out in the world. So, you know, the fact that they would go to a conference and they would give a talk, that actually is sort of what we do here. Part of our job is to have a public presence. But there are sacred things that you don't want to mess up, and it is possible to have missteps.
Was it a misstep, for example, to, I know this global reach is very important, and also part of the major job, maybe some would say too much of the job of a chancellor is raising money, but, you know, to hire at $15,000 a month consultants who could, for example, make contact with people like Google's Eric Schmidt and that sort of thing?
Well, it is the case that state funding for the university has gone down. It is the case that to maintain this as a great university, we have to be out in public and doing this kind of thing. I honestly don't know whether that money was a good investment or not, and I'm not in a position to be involved in those conversations. But you have to expect some amount of that kind of thing, because this is not just walk down the street and meet people. This is the public presence of a gigantic, very powerful university that needs to be involved in fundraising.
All right, and I'm going to go to your phone calls. Just a quick question for you, Bob Jacobson, about the campus shared services. I mean, there was a promise to revamp and consolidate payroll and hiring of administrative services, hiring and also bring administrative services, all that under one office. What was your reaction to that, or what was the general sense that you had to the reaction to that?
That's, you know, central services, the business operations of this place, we have 30,000 employees, is a really big effort, and it has to be done right. And for a long time, it hasn't been done so well. So efforts to improve that, efforts to modernize that are really, really hard. I think the chancellor said back in May that it was not as successful as it should have been and wanted to take a new approach to that. I think he's been given, by many faculty, he's been given some leeway to make additional progress on that, and some parts of it have improved. But fundamentally, it's something we've got to do. We've got to get better at this. One of the things that gets missed in these conversations is that Berkeley is actually already pretty efficient. There's some data around that say we have a administrative cost that's like a sixth of the private universities. So we're already doing pretty well, but that doesn't mean we can't fix this.
And again, we welcome your involvement in the program. Toll-free number is yours. It's 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org. Let me go to a caller here named Stanton, who's joining us from San Francisco. Good morning.
Hi, this is Stan Glantz. I'm a professor at UCSF and chair of the UC System-Wide Faculty Association and the past chair of the Budget Committee for the whole university. And I think the problems that we saw at Berkeley are just emblematic of the failed effort to privatize public higher education in California. The consultants the chancellor hired were to try to get him in front of billionaires to raise money. And in the end, you just can't solve the funding problems that higher ed in California has with private fundraising. And the irony of all of this is that we've done the arithmetic, and at a cost of about $40 for the median family in California, we could restore not only UC, but all of public higher education, including getting rid of all the fees. And I think the discussion really needs to view the problems at Berkeley as well as at Davis, which were also a reflection of an effort to privatize, as a failure of the efforts of the last 10 or 20 years to move from a public system of higher education to a privatized system. I view the chancellor as kind of a victim of that.
That's Stan Glanz. Good to hear from you, anti-tobacco crusader for many years and UCSF professor, and raising the question of privatization of universities, which is a central question to this discussion. Let me bring more callers on, but first a tweet from Nick, who says the top 1% think they can get away with anything. And another listener writes, can we draft Robert Reich to serve as the next Berkeley chancellor? I'm a Cal alum from back in the day, and I can't think of a better candidate than Robert Reich, except maybe Bernie Sanders. Talking about the role of a chancellor here in a broader sense, I think, as well, and many of you listeners may want to weigh in on that. What should be the expectations of a chancellor? And I mentioned perks, but a lot of these things perhaps fall into that great category. I mean, if someone's given a mansion to live in and it's rent-free, is it a perk or is it just part of what goes with being a chancellor? And what kind of background? I mean, this is a man who came from Columbia, for example. Should somebody come from private enterprise or from the private sector? Some, I think, really central and important and vital questions here. Let me go to a Berkeley caller. Alice, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I went to Cal in the mid-'80s, and I still live in Berkeley, so I'm here when the protests happen and the helicopters are hovering over the city. When I was a student and I rode my bike and I locked it by the police station and I took a lot of classes at Wheeler Hall, I slowly watched something going on. There was a little bridge you could take. They were building a tunnel from the backstage of the Wheeler Hall main auditorium to the police station. At that point, people like Gene Kirkpatrick were coming to the campus, and that's where they'd speak if it was wintertime. So I frankly, and then I was also living here when Chancellor Tien was living on campus, and a woman who was kind of crazy and living on the streets broke into his house in the middle of the night with a machete. And the response from the folks who hang around Telegraph Avenue, and at that point I was 30 years old. I'd lived here for 10 years. The response from the town, from the youngsters of the town, let me say, was to have a protest in the middle of Telegraph Avenue where they were lighting dumpsters on fire because this woman who broke into the chancellor's house in the middle of the night swinging a machete
I thank you for that historical memory, Alice, and we'll let it stand as we come up on a break here. I have to say goodbye to Bob Jacobson with thanks for his participation in this first half hour, Dean of Undergraduate Studies and also former chair of the UC Berkeley Academic Senate. If you'd like to join us, you can do that toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny.